and McIlroy was left highly frustrated.
You know, I'd worked hard in the round and no bogeys and fought well and birdied the last to, you know, feel, I think I got into the final group, and yeah, to come off the last and, you know, have something that I've done wrong. You know, I didn't realize. I mean, I've always played to the rules of the game, and if I hadn't noticed, I definitely wouldn't have played the shot. But, you know, we went back out and saw it, and it was obvious that my foot was on the crosswalk line when it should have been a few centimetres behind it, and didn't gain any sort of advantage from it. But, you know, they're the rules of this game, and, you know, everyone's got to play by them.
To the layman, it will seem like you've committed no crime, and yet you've been punished.
Yeah, that's what it sort of feels like to me, in a way. You know, I feel like I've been, you know, hard done by, but it's nothing that a fast start tomorrow can't fix.
Well, instead of being 11 under par, McIlroy is at 9 under, and he trails Craig Lee by 3 shots. The Scotsman, who was round in a fine 69, is chasing his first European Tour title. Phil Mickelson, after a brilliant 63, is joint second, 2 shots behind, with the unheralded Indian Gaganjeet Bhullar.
So golf correspondent Ian Carter. Stoke fans will probably have plenty to say to Darren Fletcher and Robbie Savage after their 1-0 defeat to Crystal Palace. 0500 909 693 to get your call into them. And we will hear from Mark Hughes after the BBC News with Suzanne Chislett.
On digital radio, digital TV, mobile and online. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
A body believed to be the missing 3-year-old from Edinburgh, Mikhail Kula, has been removed from Woodland in Kirkcaldy in Fife. His mother, who reported him missing on Thursday, is being questioned by police. A candidate for the European elections was one of 2 British people killed in a bomb and gun attack on a restaurant in the Afghan capital, Kabul, yesterday. Dell Singh from Southampton was due to stand for Labour for the South East of England region. A former British soldier, Simon Chase, was also killed. Syria's opposition group has agreed to take part in peace talks in Switzerland. The Syrian National Coalition will begin negotiations with President Assad's government on Wednesday. 2 men from Birmingham have appeared before magistrates charged with travelling to Syria to engage in terrorism. Yusuf Sawa and Mohammed Ahmed, who are both aged 21, were arrested at Heathrow earlier this week as they returned from Turkey. And the former Tory party treasurer, Lord McAlpine, has died at the age of 71. David Cameron described him as a dedicated supporter of the Conservative Party.
Sports Report on 5 Live.
Let's go back to Anfield and find out how Liverpool have responded to going a goal down to Aston Villa. Ian Brown.
Yeah, they're still struggling a bit here. Liverpool 0, Aston Villa 1. That goal from Wyman after 26 minutes set up by Agbonlahor. Villa also hit the post before that. They're adventurous, committed, a bit physical as well. They've kicked Suarez, they've elbowed Suarez. They got away with those. They have had 2 players booked, though. Liverpool's only response so far, really, a shot from Coutinho, which was turned away by Guzan. Still Liverpool 0, Villa 1.
And in the Heineken Cup, they're underway at Welford Road. Ed Marriage.
Yes, 2 minutes gone, no score, a terrific atmosphere. The prize for the winners, a home tie in the quarterfinals. The losers will almost certainly have to travel to one of the French heavyweight clubs. It's a terrific atmosphere. The commentary is on Sports Extra. It's 0-0.
Thank you very much, Ed. Here at Selhurst Park this afternoon, it finished Crystal Palace 1, Stoke 0. Let's hear from a rather disappointed Mark Hughes.
Disappointing today, to be perfectly honest. Obviously made it more difficult today by conceding a poor goal. The winning goal is one that we should have certainly have nipped in the bud a lot longer, or a lot sooner rather, before it developed into a situation where Punchin could knock the ball into the net. So the first goal today was always going to be crucial because, in fairness, it was a game of not that much quality, if I'm honest. Yeah. So, and as a consequence, I think it was a game that was always going to be decided by whoever scored first. And unfortunately for us, it was Crystal Palace today.
And how concerned are you with the overall picture? Palace are within 2 points of you now and 4 points from the bottom 3.
Well, there's lots of teams down there. I think it's a really strange league this year. There's a top and a bottom half. Usually there's lots of groups within the league, but unfortunately we're in the bottom half of the table at the moment. But we've got to pick ourselves up. It's the waveform is something that's a concern to us, so we've got to address that very, very quickly, and we will do. But today was a disappointing because this was a real opportunity for us, because I felt we had more quality in terms of what we could produce today.
Mark Hughes talking to John Southall, John alongside me here at Selhurst Park now. The defensive side of their game is worrying him, isn't it? There were errors today. There were certainly errors last Sunday against Liverpool.
I did mention that to him in the interview as well. I said, you've given a goal away today. You gave three goals away against Liverpool last Sunday. He said, well, we were pushing forward last Sunday and that happens. But he was really disappointed with the way they conceded the goal today. And it's a worry for Stoke now. If you're a Stoke fan this evening, I think you'd be a bit concerned. One win in seven, 4 points off the bottom three now. And as Mark Hughes said, he was angry tonight, I thought, Mark Hughes. You don't often see, he didn't sound angry there, but just his body language and to look at him, he was angry. And I think they need to move in the transfer market.
But Tony Pulis and Crystal Palace leave Selhurst Park happy this evening. They have beaten his former club Stoke and they are out of the bottom three. The live football continues here on 5 Live. Chelsea against Manchester United from 4 o'clock tomorrow. West Brom against Everton on Monday night from 8, and then Manchester United Sunderland in the Capital One Cup on Wednesday night. Next this evening, get your calls in for 6:06.
The UK's biggest football debate. 6:06 with Darren Fletcher and Robbie Savage on 5 Live.
So let's start in the bottom half of the Premier League, shall we? This afternoon brought relief for Chris Hughton, more pressure on Sam Allardyce, a roller coaster of emotions for Gus Poyet, and a huge celebration for Tony Pulis. Palace and Norwich won, West Ham, Fulham, and Cardiff didn't, and it's even tighter in the bottom half now, Robbie.
Yeah, from Hull down, 23 points, bottom of league 18. Who's going to go down, Darren? I have no idea whatsoever.
Aston Villa have a second goal. Come in, Ian Brown.
And it's Christian Benteke who's got it. It's Liverpool 0, Villa 2. Again, it was made by Agbonlahor. He swept in across. Mignolet stretched to try and palm it away. It was indecisive goalkeeping, took it away from the defender Colletoure as well, and presented Benteke virtually with an open goal. He heads it in. It's Liverpool 0, Aston Villa 2 after 36 minutes.
More from that game throughout the programme here on 6:06. At the top, it's as you were. Manchester City are up to 103 goals. That's an average of 5 a game at home. But Arsenal stay top after their win. The leaders in the Championship keep winning, don't they? Leicester, QPR, Forest and Derby all got 3 points. But what happened at Reading to Bolton? 7-1. And Paul Ince and Blackpool have now lost 9 of their last 10. Leighton Orient back on top after Brentford's 8-game winning streak came to an end. And more misery for the long-travelling fans today. This time in League 2, Exeter were due to play Morecambe and it was called off at 2:15. Robbie, who's your non-league team of the day?
Well, it's not mine because I've been on final score, but somebody's picked Chorley FC for me. You know, they beat Skelmsdale 4-1 at home. They're now 4 points behind in the Premier Division of the Northern Premier League with 4 games in hand.
And we've got another one of your playlists for the designated drivers, the rest of the A-side on the final edition of the Christmas number one driving album. Whatever's on your mind, as long as it's clean and it's about football, 0500 909 693. I'm Darren Fletcher with the man who giggled a lot last week, Robbie Savage. This is 6:06.
Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate. Call 0500 909 693. Calls are free from most landlines, but some networks and mobile operators will charge.
6:06.
It's your football phone-in. The UK's biggest football debate
on 5 Live.
Didn't see this coming, Robbie, did you? Liverpool and Aston Villa?
Well, I was Aston Villa midweek against Arsenal, and for 75 minutes they were extremely poor. Paul Lambert said they played well second half. I disagreed. They smashed up to Benteke in the last 15 minutes, got a few knockdowns, but we're very, very poor. Did not see the result coming at all.
Loads of ways you can get in touch as always tonight. 0500 909 693. You can text 85058, email 6:06 at bbc.co.uk, or get in touch via social media.
What a nice tweet last week after the show.
Absolutely.
Especially off Danny Baker. You know, to say that this show now is what it used to be when he'd done it. It will never be that because he was unbelievable. But for him to say that, what? And self-praise is no praise, really, but I just thought I'd put it out there for Danny Baker to mention this show last week. Fantastic. It's a credit to all the staff and everybody who works on it.
That's not what you said to me on the phone in the week, but I go with that. And that's also probably the most modest I've ever heard you. We're off to a good start. 0500.
Danny Baker, broadcasting legend.
Yeah. You've got the music ready for later.
Three great tracks this week. Yeah, and I know two of them.
Do you?
Yeah.
You don't know the other one?
I can sing.
I don't know any of them, do I?
Yeah, I have good songs.
Let's get straight to it tonight because there's so much to talk about. I mean, What a day. Well, what about this Premier League table? It's so bizarrely tight from halfway to the bottom. Let's speak to Steve. He's a West Ham fan. He was there today. Steve, you lost today. What's it like at the minute to be a Hammer?
Absolute shocking, mate. Absolutely shocking. But I just don't know what Allardyce is. One he's there for. I look at that team today, the first half against Newcastle, who, to me, are sort of top 10 tied, absolutely murdered us in how to play football, passed the ball about like it was a Sunday league game. We were clueless, absolutely didn't have a clue what to do. None of the players, in my opinion, are Premier League, apart from maybe three players in the West Ham side, are Premier League players. That's how poor we are at the moment. Second half, obviously had a bit of a rollicking, come out, done a little bit. Always knew that Newcastle were going to score, even though we got a lucky goal really at the end of the first half. But we're looking dire at the moment, mate. Absolutely dire.
Steve, it seems to be a well-used cliche in football at the moment. Whenever you put a programme on to analyse this kind of thing, the stock-in-trade cliche is, and it's really starting to wind me up, is that if West Ham were going to sack their manager and Sam Allardyce was available, he's the manager they go for. Stereotypically, Sam Allardyce's teams are hard to beat. I look at the West Ham team, it doesn't look hard to beat. That's what Big Sam brings to the table. Functional football, a team that's hard to beat. This West Ham team, at the moment, isn't hard to beat.
Spot on. Not hard to beat. Very poor. I look at the January transfer window. The excuses were from Golden Sullivan and Allardyce is, we will get people in. Come January, we're going to spend. It's now the 15th or what is it, 16th of January, whatever it is, middle of January, we've got no one in. Andy Carroll, to me, is without a doubt the best English centre-forward when he's fit. Without a doubt. Stuart Downing can do it on his day.
Steve.
Go on.
As you're saying, Andy Carroll is the best English centre-forward on his day.
He's the best.
Better than Rooney? Better than Sturridge?
Oh, sorry. OK, Robbie, you're right. He is the best at in his position. When it comes to a big centre-forward, hold the ball up with Allardyce, likes to get the ball down the flanks, get it flicked in, knock it in. Carroll is the one for it. Without a doubt, on his day, Andy Carroll is a handful against any Premier League defence, without a doubt.
Yep.
Right, so the reason Allardyce, he said, he's all his eggs in one basket. We'll buy Carroll, get injured. We buy Downing for him. Come January, right, so we've had the excuse before January, then we get, okay, we're going to buy two or three new players. We need two or three defenders for a start. Our midfield, honestly, our midfield is the slowest midfield in the Premier League. Anyone goes a bit Noble, yeah, he's West Ham, mate, I love him, he's a West Ham boy. Through. Noble's like a poor man, Ray Wilkins. He's a crab. Forward, back, sideways, back.
Steve, I want to keep you on all night, but I think you need to go and have a sit down. I love your passion, and I hear what you're saying. Steve, thanks for your call. 0500 909 693. I don't think I'm being harsh there on the Sam Allardyce situation.
I think it's a tired argument now.
It is a tired argument, exactly.
Also, that injuries, everybody gets injuries within the season. When then players are on the pitch, I think it's the first goal today, the cross comes in. Matt Taylor was in the centre. He's got under the ball. James Collins has gone out to in a full-back position, didn't stop the cross. It should be the other way around, surely. Matt Taylor stopping the cross. James Collins stayed in the middle of the goal. And it was, I think it was Remy who toe-poked it in. But West Ham, Andy Carroll, come on, Fletch, and Mr. Sitter. Early days of him yet. But to put all the eggs in one basket, Andy Carroll, West Ham, I think West Ham are going down.
West Ham fans, you think they're going down?
I can't see where they... You know, as you said, his teams are hard to beat.
Yeah.
As I said, before, in the trail, you can pick any one from 10 teams, let's be honest.
Yes.
But you've got to look rationally and look in current form. You can't see where West... They won West last week at Cardiff, you know, as Captain Cole got the goal.
Southampton are the separator, aren't they? Southampton have got 31.
Yes,
everybody else is in it. 11 clubs
so
at the minute.
So tight, but... They need Andy Carroll to score them goals. There's too much pressure on him.
Yeah.
Too much pressure on him.
West Ham fans, what's to be done? 0500 909 693. Let's speak to Khalid in Winchester, who's an Arsenal fan. Good evening, Khalid.
Evening, guys.
How are you? It's top of the league.
Yeah, it can't be better, can't. And I believe that if you look at the recent run of Arsenal since the Boxing Day, we played five, we won five. And if you look at the likes that we managed to beat, the likes of West Ham's, Newcastle's, Aston Villa's, I believe those sorts of teams that you need to beat if you are to get the title.
Yeah, I think you'd have to beat a lot of teams if you're going to win the title this season, because this Manchester City side just seems to be going through the gears now and really, really kicking on, don't they? I think if any team finishes above Manchester City this season, they'll win the championship.
Of course. They are unstoppable, but they will come a period of drought, I believe. The league is still long, still something like 16 games to go. They are sort of scenario, for example, they are drawing, getting injuries, all sorts of scenarios to stop them from scoring, but I believe it's going to be a two-horse race.
OK, Kelly, thanks for your call. 0500 909 693. Just, I was driving back today, so I was listening to the coverage on 5 Live this afternoon in the car, keeping abreast of everything, which was fantastic. But I realised when I was driving back today, some of the things that we say as commentators, and I'm as guilty as anyone, and there's one thing that I don't understand, and I've said it before, but I don't know what it is. So one of the reporters today mentioned that someone had gone back to their old stomping ground. Have you ever been anywhere and thought, I'm going here because I want to stomp? What is a stomping ground? Does anybody out there know? 85058, email 606 at bbc.co.uk.
Yeah, on that point,
a stomping ground?
And I still wouldn't know why Ian Dennis says 4 and 5 live, 909 and 693.
Well, that's the
Denno. I pulled him on Monday night. I don't know why he says and 693. Denno, stop doing it.
So what is somebody? Can somebody text in tonight and tell me what a stomping ground is? And also, have you ever had despairing hands? Have you ever got up one morning and you've got your hands are despairing? You're standing there. You say, I can't eat my breakfast because I have despairing hands. One of the guys today said the ball went in beyond the despairing hands of the goalkeeper. And it just painted the picture of this guy's hands going completely mad. So have you ever had despairing hands? And also, what is a stomping ground? 85058. Let's get to Anfield. Another goal, Ian Brown.
On the brink of half-time, Liverpool are back in it. It's Liverpool 1, Aston Villa 2. It was made by Luis Suarez. He threatened to shoot from long distance. He decided not to and slipped the ball through towards Daniel Sturridge. It was flicked on to Sturridge very carefully by Jordan Henderson, and Sturridge stabbed it beyond the goalkeeper from the edge of the six-yard box. So it's Liverpool 1, Aston Villa 2. We have about 30 seconds of stoppage time left in the first half.
Thanks, Ian.
On those little screens, we have what the caller's going to be talking about next. And yeah. I'd be reluctant to put this guy through, but you've got to give him his say, you know, because I can't believe what Dave is about to say.
OK, David in Leighton, our little box is yellow, which means you're the caller on the yellow screen, and it says Liverpool, : Brendan Rodgers should be sacked. David Leighton.
Right. Brendan Rodgers, when he got the job, should not have been given the job of such a big team when he was taking the job after managing Swansea. You don't get a job like Liverpool after only with all respects to Swansea City, Brendan Rodgers cannot go from Swansea to Liverpool. I can't see Liverpool finishing in the top four because their defence is dreadful. Signing Simon Mignolet, he's an absolute joke of a goalkeeper. He makes so many mistakes. Why did they sign him from Sunderland? He wasn't even a good goalkeeper at Sunderland. He's making the defence very, very nervous, and Liverpool cannot keep a clean sheet. They let in 3 goals against Stoke, and they were lucky they got that penalty in the second half. The other signings that he made in the summer were also dreadful. He signed Aspas, who isn't good enough to play in the Spanish league. He signed Mamadou Sakho. He's not good enough in defence either. Steven Gerrard is out on his feet. Why don't they sign another central midfielder? And why isn't Brendan Rodgers signing anyone now? He needs to sign another playmaker in midfield. At the moment, they're getting overrun by Aston Villa. So, with all respects to Aston Villa, Liverpool should not be losing for the second time at home to Aston Villa in a year. This is not good enough for Brendan Rodgers. If Liverpool don't get top four, Suarez will leave and the whole team will fall apart again. We've got to get top four, but I can't see Brendan Rodgers as a top four manager.
Why?
Because he's not skilled enough. He hasn't
How do you know that?
Because he can't get the team right. He doesn't know his best defence. He doesn't know his best goalkeeper.
Well, he does. Of course he knows his best goalkeeper. He picks Mignolet every week.
But Mignolet is not good enough. He's nervous when he kicks the ball out, when the ball comes back to him. What's the point in letting Reina go when we got Mignolet?
Oh, hang on a second, David. On the Reina thing, I mean, I'm thinking back to last season on 606. We got Liverpool fans calling in saying Reina was becoming a liability himself because he was dropping the odd cross and making the odd mistake. You know, goalkeepers go through these kind of things. Their mistakes are magnified. I think the argument about Brendan Rodgers not being good enough to take the job because he's come from Swansea is a ridiculous claim. That's like saying Michael Laudrup shouldn't be given a different job at a bigger club because he's been the manager of Swansea. Sir Alex Ferguson got the Man United job after being at Aberdeen. You know, Wenger was at Nagoya Grampus 8. I mean, these people aren't coming in from Barcelona and Real Madrid. That's got not a lot to do with it. Rodgers is doing a really good job, surely, to rebuild this Liverpool side.
But why are they losing at home to Aston Villa?
Well, it's only half-time. It's 2-1.
OK, David, why did Man City get beat at Cardiff early in the season?
Yeah, but Man City lost away to... Liverpool are losing at home to Aston Villa.
Well, why don't we see what the result is after 90 minutes and before we get knee-jerk about what's going to happen today against Aston Villa? And when you mention they lost last season, fine, maybe they did. But this is a better Liverpool team now. And to pick you up on the point where you're saying about the players that he signed in the summer, it was difficult to attract the kind of players that I'm sure you would like to see in a Liverpool shirt without Champions League football to offer. Last season, Liverpool were a million miles from the Champions League. It limits the kind of players that you can go and sign. If they finish in the top four this year, Brendan Rodgers is going to be signing some serious big hitters because the finance is there and the club will continue to move forward, surely.
They're not going to finish in the top four if they can't beat Villa, and I reckon Villa will go on. Villa are playing much better than Liverpool.
That's a rubbish argument. That's a rubbish. If they can't beat Villa at home, they won't finish in the top four. That's a rubbish argument.
Don't forget, Villa won at Arsenal on the opening day, an Arsenal side who, at the moment, according to the table that's in front of me, are top of the league.
Don't forget, Liverpool also lost at home to Southampton and away at Hull. You don't get top four if you can't beat these teams.
David, I can't agree with you. You've had your say. We've had a listen. I think it's absolutely ludicrous, some of the things you're saying, but that's just my opinion. You might think I'm a complete joker too. 0500 909 693 if you want to give us a call on 606. And let's speak to Paul in London. Hi, Paul.
Hello, fellas.
You OK?
Not really. No, you're all... enough.
West Ham supporter, Paul.
Yeah, watching this rubbish week in, week out. Sam Allardyce is an absolute dinosaur of a manager. We've been there today. We didn't put a tackle in first half. He's got players playing out of position. Banning plays on the right. All they did was double up on him, not let him cross the ball. He had to cross it with his right foot half the time. Jarvis can't play on that side, cannot cross the ball. Just stick of it. He moans about injuries. We're the only Premiership club that started the season with two forwards, one he spent all our money on, and three centre-halves. That is purely down to the manager. I can't believe that he keeps coming out with this rubbish. It is so poor, it is a joke.
Just stay with us, Paul. This is what he said post-match regarding the injury situation at West Ham.
I've had the most bizarre year I've ever seen in my entire career. And that's a long, long time, by the way. I'm frightened of even getting out of bed shortly because in case I trip up and damage myself and I end up in hospital. It is unbelievable what's been happening to us this season, and I can't explain why. I'll have to go and ask somebody, have I done something wrong or something? Because every corner I turn around, there's another obstacle that makes us difficult to get out and play our best performances that I know we can get.
So it's the injury situation, Paul. He's never seen a season like this. It's bizarre. He's frightened to get out of bed in case he trips up and ends up in hospital himself.
No, listen, every team gets injuries. Every team gets injuries. The trouble is you've got three centre-halves, you go into a season, it's not enough. Two forwards, you go into the season, one's injured for half the season, it's not enough. We bought Stuart Downing for £6 million. Stuart Downing's a good player. He plays him on the wrong side, he plays him on the right. He hasn't scored a goal season. He's not cutting in and scoring goals.
Paul, who's the fella who keeps saying 11 midfield players? You better make that point for him, otherwise he's going to get really annoyed.
I'm his dad.
So tell us about the 11 midfield players, Dad.
I mean, can you ask me a question, Robbie? How is Collison playing in front of Morrison?
Ask him the question, Robbie.
So how is Collison playing in front?
Listen, you might have played with Jack Collison. Not nice boy, right? Championship player. How's he playing in front of Morrison? How's the Army playing out of position? He plays all these players out of position every week and he blames things on injuries. We have got injuries, but he's playing people in the wrong position. Matt Taylor today.
The goal, I've seen the goal. Yeah, he's got underneath the ball in a centre-half position. Yeah, he's got under
absolutely
the ball in a centre-half position. There's a term in football when you listen to Big Sam's, you know...
Comments,
yeah. You know. Is he deflecting? That's the question you want to ask. They have had injuries, but there's got to be a point. Everybody gets injuries.
Is there any sign, Paul, that it's getting any better? I mean, I'm trying to look for any kind of positives. I mean, you obviously see them a lot more than Robbie and I do because it's your team and you care passionately about them. Are you seeing anything that makes you think, well, OK, we lost against Newcastle today, but I can see this improving? Or is this becoming a real concern for you?
Fellas, I can't. This is worse than under Avram Grant. I've got to be honest, this is worse than I'm... The excuses that he comes out with are just diabolical. He's like a propaganda machine. Sam Allardyce propaganda machine. I mean, he talks about chances. We created 3 chances today in the whole game. Newcastle must have created 10. First half, they should have been out of sight, Newcastle, because we defended so bad. So bad.
Paul, thanks for your call. I'm going to move it on because we've got loads of people trying to get through, but some good points that you've raised there. Do you know with the West Ham crowd, I get the impression that certain managers can pull the wool over certain football supporters' eyes. But I think when you're the manager of West Ham, you can't do that. I mean, they know the stuff down there, don't they?
I think football fans in general, a lot of them are...
But I think there's some instances where you think, well, you might get away with it there. But I think with this crew at West Ham, you know, they're pretty straight down the middle, aren't they, with their opinions on things. I think, you know... I think we're going to get a host of calls like this tonight, aren't we, from the two West Ham lads that we've heard from already. Let's bring in David. Hi, David.
Hello, yeah, how you doing?
Yeah, you're West Ham as well, David.
Yeah, West Ham. I'm a bit of an armchair fan, but, you know, watching them the way they are again this season, I can't see it staying up again. Right, and I've watched them be relegated a few times over the last few years, and it's a sorry sight. Sam's got to go.
I mean, it would be disastrous, wouldn't it, if you were relegated and you've got this proposed move to the Olympic Stadium coming, if you're not in the Premier League and all that kind of thing. It's a big next few weeks for you.
I hear some people like saying, oh, well, Sam's, you know, it's going to cost us $5 million to get Sam out of his contract and the rest of it. But think about how much money we're going to lose if we go down. You know, it's a no-brainer. Sam Allardyce, you know, what has he done with any imagination? And what is he doing in the changing room to inspire the players? Because to me, those players don't look like they want to play for the manager. And I've seen it in West Ham before. A couple of years ago, it was the same thing. They're just the players, they don't look like they want to play for him. And for me, that's the manager's fault. The manager's got to be kicking some arse in there. And I don't know what he's doing. What is he doing? I mean, can you think of anything imaginative that Sam Allardyce has done with the West Ham team or with his... you know, transfers and all the rest of it over the last couple of years. I mean, it's like he tries to pack the midfield with someone big and burly, and he's got Kevin Nolan in, Mac Taylor, all the old players. You know, it might as well be Bolton from 5-10 years ago. It's ridiculous.
It's no good when your captain gets sent off twice as well, Fletch, for needless thing, you know, and obviously, Nolan. Yeah, that is. And when your captain's doing things like that, it's not a very, very good sign.
Thanks for your call, David. 0500 909 693 if you want to give us a call tonight on 606. Let's bring in Kevin. Kevin's a Stoke fan who's been to watch Stoke lose to Crystal Palace today. Hi, Kevin.
Hello there. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. What was it like today?
Well, a fantastic day out in London with friends from Palace, and it was a lovely day. However, the game itself, from Stoke's point of view, Mark Hughes came in with all new ideas and fresh ideas, and all he's doing... is actually the defence actually have the ball and they play the ball wonderfully well in their own half. As soon as they get into Palace's half or any team's half, it is a nightmare. They don't create chances. They have a lot of possession in their own half, but do nothing with it. The pace of midfield is very slow. Peters and Wilson, you've probably seen on television how appalling our defence is. Without Hoof and without although Jack Buchan had a wonderful game today, thank goodness, you've seen the Stoke defence exposed. You know, they were absolutely abysmal. And I'm not disrespecting Palace because Tony Pulis is doing a great job there, and I am a massive Tony Pulis fan. But, you know, they are basically, without Puncheon and perhaps Shamak up front, they are basically, should I say this because I'm in London, I don't want to get mugged, they are basically a championship team who are punching above their weight.
I think you're okay to make a comment in London without getting mugged, Kevin. I think you'll be all right. You know, I mean, I wouldn't take it too far. You know, you'll be all right.
No,
I can promise you that.
Kevin, did you go to the game against Liverpool last weekend?
Yeah, that was... did you see the defending last weekend?
Yeah, the defending, but you're saying you're not creating chances. They could have scored 6 goals against Liverpool last weekend.
That's because, I mean, Liverpool are open at the moment. I think they're another team are open. That's why they won't win the league. They're very exposed at the back. They push forward too in waves, and they push forward too much. Chelsea, under the current manager, at the beginning of the season, Stoke beat them 3-2. Stoke would not beat them 3-2 now, believe you me.
They beat them about 4 weeks ago.
He's changed. They've changed. They're a changed team, Chelsea. I believe that Chelsea will win the league.
So basically, you're not having Mark Hughes. That's what you say, is it?
I'm not anti Mark Hughes. I just think his style of football does not suit the current side. He's playing football in his own half. You know, it's basic. I'd run a school football team in Stoke, in Newcastle.
Kevin, I think you're right. I mean, Robbie can take you on, and he can drop the Mark Hughes one in, because we know that, you know, Mark was Robbie's hero when he was growing up, and he's played for him, etc., etc.
I think you make
a good point, Kevin. I think the difficulty for Mark at the moment, and this is defending him to a certain extent, he's trying to change the way the team play with the players who don't play that way, which is a problem. And until he is able to go out and sign players
consistently,
that way, he's not going to get the balance right, is he, between what Stoke were and what they want to be.
He is not going to be able, unfortunately, Robbie, he is not going to be able to attract the players in Stoke. Stoke is a town that is neither in the Midlands, it's not in the North, it's not in the East Midlands. We are on our own, we're Stokies. We feel very, very defensive, and we are not going to attract players of quality who are going to play in our midfield, who are going to start running and winning massive games and come in the top 4 or 5 in the league. Tony Pulis was sensible enough, and, you know, they did play good football. I disagree with a lot of the pundits, and so did Mr. Lawrenson, if you listen to him very carefully. He did say Stoke played some very, very good football, and they were getting better and better and more wily. What Tony Pulis has got, it's small details that win matches. The difference between Chelsea and Arsenal and Alex Ferguson and Moyles is a small detail that a really, really top-class manager's got.
Kevin, thanks for your call. I've got to move it on, because I've got to get to the news. The only piece of advice Robbie and I would give you is just be careful when you walk around any corners now. You've had a pop at the Crystal Palace lot, etc. 0500 999 693, if you'd like to give us a call on 606 85058 on the text. Email 606@bbc.co.uk, and don't forget to get the designated drivers in for Robbie, A, to see if he can do it without cracking up in laughter like he did last week, and B, because we need to get this playlist on. We've got one of your playlist tonight. If you want to be part of
it, whose playlist was it?
I'm not sure, actually. We'll find out during the news. Here it is with Suzanne Chisler.
On digital radio, digital TV, mobile, and online. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Police are continuing to question the mother of the 3-year-old boy who was reported missing from his home in Edinburgh on Thursday morning. Officers say they strongly believe a body discovered in Kirkcaldy last night is that of Mikhail Kula. Many of those who helped search for him are expected to attend a special church service in Muir House this evening. A Labour MEP candidate and a former soldier have been named as the two British men killed in a terror attack in Afghanistan last night. Dal Singh and Simon Chase were among 21 people who died. 5 members of the same family, including 2 women who came from Northampton, have been found shot dead in the US state of Utah. 34-year-old Joshua Boren, a police officer in Linden City, is thought to have killed his 2 children, wife Kelly and mother-in-law Marie King, before turning a gun on himself. 2 men from Birmingham have appeared in court in London accused of travelling to Syria to engage in acts of terrorism. Youssef Sawa and Mohammed Ahmed, who are both 21, have been remanded in custody to appear at the Old Bailey later this month. And David Cameron has led tributes to the former Tory party deputy chairman Lord McAlpine, who's died at the age of 71. The Prime Minister said he'd been a dedicated supporter of the Conservatives. That's the 5 Live News. The sport comes from Carthy.
Thank you. Arsenal have kept their 1-point lead at the top of the Premier League after a Santi Cazorla brace gave them a 2-0 win over Fulham. Second place to Manchester City scored their 100th goal of the season in their 4-2 win over Cardiff City, who now sit bottom of the table. Crystal Palace moved off the foot of the league with a 1-0 win over Stoke, while Sunderland drew 2-2 with Southampton. Norwich beat Hull 1-0 and Newcastle were 3-1 winners over West Ham. Liverpool are hosting Aston Villa. The second half has started. Ian Brown is at Anfield.
Yes, we're a few seconds into it. It's still Liverpool 1, Aston Villa 2. It's an accurate reflection, and Liverpool are lucky that they were able to fashion a goal in the first half stoppage time to give them a potential route back into this. Sturridge scoring that goal. Until then, Villa had played with adventure, pace, a fair amount of physicality, and deserved their 2-0 lead. Agbonlahor made both the goals. A low ball in from the left-hand side, touched in by Wijman, and then a cross from the right led to Magnolet flapping in the goal for Liverpool. And Benteke scored with a simple diving header. Suarez was battered and bruised, but lively enough to contribute to that Liverpool lifeline goal. And Liverpool have made a change at half-time. Coutinho's gone off. Lucas has come on. They were light in midfield, but it's still Liverpool 1, Villa 2.
Celtic have a 13-point lead at the top of the Scottish Premiership after a 3-0 win over Motherwell, despite being down to 10 men. Second-placed Aberdeen were beaten 1-0 by Inverness County Thistle. There were also wins for St Mirren and Ross County. Saracens booked their place in the quarter-finals of the Heineken Cup with a 64-6 win over Connaught. Leinster are Pool 1 winners and quarter-finalists after a 36-3 win against Ospreys. Exeter beat Cardiff 19-13 in Pool 2, while Glasgow were beaten 15-8 by Toulon. And there's a top-of-the-table clash in Pool 5 with Ulster visiting Leicester. Ed Marriage is watching.
31 minutes gone, it's Leicester 9, Ulster 9. A terrific atmosphere inside Welford Road, considering both these sides have already qualified for the last eight. But the prize for the winners is a considerable one. It's a home tie in the quarterfinals, while the losers could be on their way to play one of the French heavyweights in the last eight. Three penalties for Toby Flood, three for Ruan Pienaar. It's Leicester 9, Ulster 9.
Thank you. Andy Murray is through to the last 16 of the Australian Open after a convincing straight sets win over Feliciano Lopez of Spain. Murray beat the 26th seed in much cooler conditions than his previous matches and will face world number 119 Stéphane Robert of France in the fourth round. A two-stroke penalty for Rory McIlroy means he finds himself two shots behind leader Craig Lee of Scotland at the Abu Dhabi Championship. McIlroy thought he'd carded a 4-under par 68, but he was penalised at the end of the round. And the Gary Moore trained at Sire de Grugy staked his claim to the Queen Mother Champion Chase at March's Cheltenham Festival with a runaway success in the Clarence House Chase at Ascot, winning by 11 lengths.
An early evening check on the travel news then, and the main problem so far is on the M1 heading northbound through Derbyshire. An accident between junctions 25 and 26 towards Eastwood has closed one lane. The vehicle hit the central reservation near Charles Services, and the Highways Agency is currently deciding whether to close the carriageway for a time to recover the scene. Elsewhere, flooding is still causing problems on some roads in the southeast of England. One to mention is the A27 eastbound east of Chichester. A lane is still closed there between Portfield roundabout and the A285, and repairs are due to take place over night. Suzanne Chislett, Five Live Travel.
It's your football phone-in.
The UK's biggest football debate.
6:06
with Darren Fletcher and Robbie Savage on Five Live.
Welcome back to 6:06. Well, this time last week, Fletcher having good fun, but we've managed to hold it together this week. You know, if anybody missed last week's show, this is what they missed.
We know how good he seems to be, Yanazai. He's only a baby in footballing terms at 18. How tempted do you think David Moyes will be to ride him?
So we've got Sharon's last... So we've got Sharon's last... Sorry. Oh, we've got Sharon's last tune now, Fletch. It's up. Is this one...
The way she walks. The way she
talks. Oh, what do we have to put up with here on 6:06? The full video is available, by the way, on the Five Live website, and you can have a look at it.
So we need more designated drivers this week.
Yeah, we do, because we've got the new playlist. CJ this week. Is it CJ's playlist this week?
CJ
this week. We've had one or two definitions for a stomping ground. You're not really getting to the heart of it for me. A stomping ground is somewhere that you go regularly. That's from Brian. He's a Coventry fan. He said stomping... James says stomping brackets, also stamping ground, means it comes from animals, where groups of animals congregate together regularly. They stamp down the ground. This is from Howard in York. A stomping ground back in the 50s and 60s used to be where people made friends and got their name known. And this one says, Dear Five Live, according to the Oxford Dictionary, a stomping ground is North American for stamping ground, a place where someone regularly spends time. Let's bring in Peter. Hi, Peter. Peter in North London.
Hello there.
You seem to know what a stomping ground is.
Well, as a musician,
yeah,
I've always known traditional jazz. If you look at some of the titles, they are called stomps, like Stomping at the Savoy is one title in question. So I always thought stomping is dancing.
Are you allowed to stomp at the Savoy? Is that okay there?
Well, I presume so, yeah. That's what the title of the song is.
Yeah. So we think that it might be the old jazz dance, the stomp. Your old stomping ground might be where you used to go and let it all hang out on a Saturday night.
Yeah, that's right. A dance, you know. You go and have a good stomp.
Fantastic. By the way, just before you go, have you ever had despairing hands, Peter? Just that was the other one that got me this afternoon.
I've never had despairing hands. Being a drummer, I can't allow my hands to be in despair.
Good lad. Thanks, Peter. Thanks for your call. So Peter seems to think your stomping ground is where you used to dance to the jazz music. Okay. Well, if that's what it is, fine. It was just... I've said it before, but... I don't know. Suarez, whoa, big decision.
Big decision.
Big decision at Anfield. I think we need to buzz Ian Brown and see if we can go over there. Ian, a penalty to Liverpool.
Yes, a penalty for Liverpool. They're trailing Villa 2-1. It was a great through ball from Steven Gerrard. Magnificent first touch by Luis Suarez. He was taking it around the goalkeeper, Brad Guzan, who came sliding out. He careered into the Uruguayan, at least from my angle. It looked a pretty clear-cut penalty. I'm just seeing a replay of it. Suarez had taken the ball a little bit wider and the goalkeeper did commit himself and bring him down, it seemed, with his right hand just sweeping underneath the legs of Suarez, who certainly made the most of it. No action against the goalkeeper apart from the awarding of the penalty, which is going to be taken by Steven Gerrard, and a chance for the Liverpool captain to draw his side level 8 minutes into the second half in front of the Kop. It's Gerrard against Guzan. Gerrard comes up and scores low into the corner. The goalkeeper went the right way, but there was too much force on it. So Suarez wins the penalty. Gerrard converts the penalty, and it's Liverpool 2, Villa 2.
Thanks, Ian. So the comeback well and truly on at Anfield now. Liverpool 2-0 down. Now it's back to 2-2. Penalty for you, Robbie?
I think so. I think there's a minimal amount of contact there with his elbow, I think. And Suarez running such high speed, I think it's a penalty.
Just out of interest as well, the game at lunchtime, have you ever seen a Premier League team at home give the opposition as much room to play as Sunderland did today? Every time a Southampton player got the ball and turned, there wasn't a Sunderland player within 10 yards of
him. And the point that I'd make there is on Rodriguez's first goal, he's allowed to take three touches on the edge of the box before his third touch he puts in. Surely somebody must be closing him down there.
I mean, credit to Sunderland for coming back and getting a 2-2, because you couldn't see that. But I just wonder if you're a Sunderland fan today, what you were thinking after 25 minutes. I've never seen, and bearing in mind, this Sunderland team had beaten Manchester United and then put four past Fulham at Craven Cottage. You would have expected them to come out really revved up, confident.
Great comeback, though.
It was a great comeback. I just don't know where that came from. If you're a Sunderland fan and you can shed any light on it, give us a call, 0500 996 693.
I had a text off my pal Matt Janssen.
Okay.
Who's assistant manager at Chorley.
Yes.
Flitty, Gary Flickloff manager.
Yep.
Great win for them, 4-1. They're our non-league team of the day. Great win against Skelmersdale.
Did you tell Gary and Matt that I tried to get Chorley on as the non-league team of the day a few weeks ago, and as your former teammates, you shouted me down and went for somebody else? Did you tell them that?
No, I didn't.
And they know now.
And as they've texted me now, it is my non-league team of the day. As before, when they didn't text me, it wasn't my non-league team of the day because I wasn't here.
And it wasn't today either, was it?
No.
No. So your former teammates, you've not backed twice. 0500 909 693 if you'd like to join in tonight on 606. And if you're Gary Flitcroft or Matt Janssen, if you'd like to give us a call just to say to Robbie how disappointed you are in him, we will be happy to take the call. Let's speak to David in Leicestershire, who's a Leicester fan. Six games on the trot, David. Six wins on the trot for you now.
Yeah, we're under an absolutely wonderful run of form at this moment in time. We're 5 points clear of second place. We're 6 points clear of third place. 57 points from 26 games. I believe this year, as younger players last year, that only won 3 out of the last 17. They're a year older. They're a year more experienced. They're a year wiser. with a stronger outfit. And I believe this year we've got a plan B now, where last week we played Derby off the park, because Derby are a good side. You know, we showed football then how well we can play. We've not played well at Leeds today. We should have been out of sight at half-time, but Leeds didn't take the chances. And second half, we just hung in there. As the game went on, we got stronger, and we scored a good goal, and we held out, and we've won ugly today.
David, the combination up front and Vardy and Nugent, so much pace and, you know...
Jamie Vardy is probably the quickest player in the division. You wouldn't believe, Robbie, when he came to us last year from Fleetwood, I thought there's a lad here with a lot of promise. And then he just seemed, if the confidence drained out of him. This year, he is a handful for any defence, because he is a great chaser of lost causes. And he never gives the defence time to settle. And besides that, his all-round play has come on tremendous.
It's a good job you have been winning these matches, though, because everybody else in the top four or five are winning them as well. And you know, when you look at that Leicester team... Yeah. You've got so much depth. I mean, you talk about the two, you know, Vardy and Nugent have been starting, but you've got two more to bring off the bench who could start for most teams in the Championship. You know the two players who have really impressed me this season in that team? Drinkwater and James in central midfield. I think they've matured so much in there.
Yeah, them two. Matty James has come on this year, along with Vardy, along with Liam Moore at the back, who will be one day a class act. He is a good player, Liam Moore, at 19 years. But yeah, Drinkwater and Matty James have done well. But we've got a better squad this year. He's brought in a little bit of experience. Gareth Taylor-Fletcher. We've got a Polish international. We've got Dean Hammond from Southampton. They don't get a lot of game time, but when they come on, they don't let you down, because they're experienced and they know the job and they know the division. And I just hope this year is going to be Leicester's year.
OK, David, thanks for your call. Thanks for your call, David. There's a fair chance, Robbie, that they are going to get automatic promotion this season. They look so good.
I think them and QB have the two strongest squads. And I think they both, if you're looking at squad, quality of squad, those two should go up automatically.
And let's bring in Brandon, who's a late Norient fan. Brandon, you're back to the top of the table.
Yeah, still can't believe it. They're 5 points clear now of third place, and... just they're not getting enough credit, probably. You know, there's so many teams in that league, like Brentford, Wolves, Preston, Peterborough, all these teams with massive budgets in comparison. Orient haven't spent anything in 5 years. And they're bringing in all these different players. They brought in Dagnall the other day. He scored two on his debut, coming off the bench today to win it from being 1-0 down. So it's just, still can't really believe it. Everyone keeps telling me that they'll drop off eventually, but...
Well, that's it, isn't it? Because you look at this Leighton Orient squad and see some of the squads around that top six, and you wonder whether they can sustain it. But just when you get a result or two that goes the wrong way and you think, well, here we go, they're able to bounce back again and get back to the top of the league. They've got real resilience this season, it would appear, the Orient players.
They went through a bad sort of time before Christmas, and then they brought it back up. Brentford won six in a row, and they've just come through it, and now it's come to an end with Brentford, and now they're still 1 point clear of them. And they've got four more home games. They've played four more away games than home games, and they've got the best away record in the whole of the country. So there's not much going wrong, but just hopefully they can keep it up. There's only 20 games left now. And even if they do get playoffs, I think everyone would still be happy with that, even if they do stutter a bit.
Brandon, good luck. Enjoy the rest of the season. Brandon's a Leighton Orient fan. You've had a gift today, Robert, haven't you, as well? There's a gift waiting for you when you arrive from the team.
It's fantastic. It's a Beauteo man in a case, specially designed when I play for Leicester. It's got flowing blonde locks, Savage 8 in the back, and I can't see a ball. That's the biggest worry. I never had the ball, did I?
It's got more than just flowing blonde locks, though, that identifies you. Look at it from profile on.
It's got a big nose.
You're listening to 606.
Five Live Breakfast. A survey of more than 100 elite sportswomen suggests that almost 90% of them empathise with double Olympic gold medalist Rebecca Adlington after she broke down in tears on ITV's I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Rachel Atherton is the world downhill mountain biker and took part in the survey.
It's so important for us as athletes and for all these young girls coming up into sport and in the world to show them that the important thing is to have a body that can work, you know, that can do the job, that can do the sport that you love, that you choose to do, and not be focused focus solely on the way you look.
5 Live Breakfast.
Weekday mornings from 6.
Call
0500 909 693.
Text
85058.
Email
606@bbc.co.uk.
606.
On 5 Live.
Doc Savage. Doc Savage.
This is Doc Savage. The man of bronze.
Right, Fletch, the first song I'm going to play for you is...
Get the windows down, here we go, elbow out.
Elbow out, it was a bit cold for that. Here we go again, Fletch. Can you say thank you to my dad, Steve Trulock, who drives every week to support the Blackpool, even in these bad times, ins out. Robbie, thanks Marcus for driving us from Yeovil to Birmingham. Feed the more and he will score. Rob. Joe, shout out to my dad making the 300 round trip on his birthday. It's a shame the referee robbed us. Get Kirkland on that plane to Rio. Designate to Doberman again. This time it was the Arsenal game. Mike and Coco in Cheadle. And my little girl thinks you're called Rotten Sandwich, Robbie. Made us laugh. Rotten Sandwich.
Rotten Sandwich.
And there's no name on the designated driver. So whoever thinks their daughter calls me Rotten Sandwich, text us back.
Can I give two dedicated driver shout outs at this point?
Of course you can.
I want to give a dedicated driver shout out to anybody who went all the way from Southampton to Sunderland, 600 mile round trip for a 12:45 kickoff.
Morecambe fans as well.
Morecambe fans as well, and my mate Boothie, who's done the driving for me today.
Stop giving your mate a shout out on the radio.
To get me from Sunderland here tonight, so I can do 600.
Well, can you drive yourself?
You can't get the car out of the car park at Sunderland for an hour after the game.
You've changed.
Can't do it.
Can you drive yourself? No.
You can't get out. They won't physically open the gates. He had to go and fetch the car and then make sure I could be here. Because, as Joe said, can't leave him on his own. Make sure you're here by 6 minutes past 6.
You've changed.
So,
and I'd just like to say thank you to Terry Lee.
Tony Lee. Is it Terry Lee?
Terry. I said Terry, yeah. Who painted me as a reputable figure with flowing blonde hair and, as you rightly said, a big nose.
And you can see a picture of it on the 606 Facebook page. And I've got to say to you, Terry, when he goes on holiday this year, will probably be using his own private jet. I've just found out how much he's charging for them. They're an inch high, millimetre by millimetre. He's on more than Sheikh Mansour at Man City, I'll tell you.
So thank you to CJ on Twitter for her playlist. There's two more, and I'm saving one of them because I know it. I don't know the other one.
You might know the next one when we play it, though.
I don't think I do.
No? OK. 0500 909 693 if you want to join in. Don't forget, you can do your playlist any week you like. Send it in. We'll pick the best one every week. And, of course, this is all the forerunner to Robbie and I going gold at Christmas, well, or platinum maybe even at Christmas, when the driving album comes out.
Has anybody done that?
Well, got to do it. There's got to be a picture of me and you in a really rough red estate car or something with a cheesy picture
waving. Just use Boothies.
And then we can do like a triple album or whatever for everybody at Christmas. Let's speak to James. James in Knutsford, who's a Man City fan. Hi, James.
Oh, yeah, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Good. Yeah, I was at the game today.
Okay.
Notching up the 100th goal. Goals 100 to 103. Good stuff, but I'm a bit worried that the number of goals is kind of screening a bit how we only have to play 10 minutes each half. Because the second half, We just let Cardiff have the ball until the 76th minute. Looked like they might get back into the game, get a draw. We turn it on, score a couple of goals, switch off again, and then Cardiff get another one towards the end.
I've got to say, if you're only playing for 10 minutes a half, you're doing pretty well in the 10 minutes that you are playing.
There were massive gaps in the midfield between the back four and pumping it up to Dzeko up front. He had a shocker today. I'm just a bit worried that when we come to Chelsea and Barcelona in the next few weeks, that these gaps are going to start appearing. I think we might have a bad result coming soon.
See, I watched the game and I just don't know what Man City fans want. I thought you were in total control. At times, OK, you weren't at your best, but you've scored 4 goals. You could have had a lot more. I just don't know what... Dzeko had a shock. I don't think he did. He scuffed the first goal in, but it goes in.
Come on, look at...
Yeah, he scuffed in, but...
That was a sitter, which he nearly missed. No, right, you're right, Dzeko, don't get me wrong, but... He's had a bit of a strange season.
I'll tell you one thing, James. I'll tell you one thing, James, where I think you have a problem. is in when you play Barcelona, is in the centre of defence. I think alongside Kompany. Yeah.
Demichelis, I'm not a fan of at all. I mean, he makes your hair look good.
Yeah, but I just think that the goal from Cardiff today, people watch Match of the Day tonight.
Yeah.
Di Michaelis went out to the left-hand side. The pass inside from Gunnarsson took him out of the game.
Yeah.
And then I've never seen Kompany beaten so easily. It was a great goal from Noon. Dropped his shoulder, come inside and smashed in the bottom corner. But I think that against Barcelona, you need... I don't know who you'd play alongside Kompany.
Well, I would go for Nastasic every time. But I was going to ask you, do you think when the manager with this rotation, that it's very difficult if you change your centre-backs every game? Because we don't really have the same centre-back pairing every game.
No, that's a fair point.
Kompany is permanent, but the other one always changes.
I think the flip side of the concerns that you and Robbie have about the centre of the Man City defence against Barcelona, I'm not too sure that they'll be that confident about the centre of their defence against Aguero, Negredo, and Dzeko either, by the way.
You know, two substitute appearances coming back. He looks like a superstar as soon as he runs on the pitch. He's been amazing, even in two substitute appearances. Don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining. I was at Main Road since 79, watching us lose at home to Bury.
Can I just ask you a question?
So, you know, I'm keeping it in perspective. Don't get me wrong.
Can I ask you?
Afternoon out, but I like James Milner, I like Zabaleta, I like old-fashioned players who give it 100% for 90 minutes.
James, can I ask you one question?
Yeah.
Is Yaya Toure the best midfielder in the world at this minute in time?
When he turns it on, yeah, because a lot of the game today has the ball, he plays it short, he doesn't want to work too hard. He had a little bit of a tussle outside our box, won the ball, and the crowd really jeered him. Come on, Yaya, run. Do something now. He ran the length of the pitch and scored.
OK, James, thanks for your call. 0500 909 693, if you'd like to give us a call on 606 tonight. No more goals as yet at Anfield, still 2-2, but maybe a significant injury for Liverpool, Ian.
Yes, indeed. Lucas came on at half-time for Coutinho. He played only 20 minutes. He's had to limp off, so Joe Allen has come on now for Liverpool. Still 2-2 here against Aston Villa. Remember, Villa were two up. We've got 23 minutes left of the game. Delph almost gave Villa the lead again, curling a shot just wide. And at the other end, Henderson has been denied by Guzan at full stretch. Still 2-2.
Thanks, Ian. 0500 909 693. If you'd like to give us a call, keep those designated drivers coming in as well. Two more of the playlist from CJ to come between now and 8 o'clock. Let's speak to Raphael, who's a West Ham fan. Hi, Raphael.
Hiya, how you doing, guys?
Yeah, good, thank you. So carry on this discussion that we've got going tonight about West Ham. What do you think?
Oh, mate, well, basically, it's like a shout out to the owners, really, and they need to really be listening to your brilliant show, because they might learn a few things from us fans and, you know, some of the media as well. Basically, we all know, and they know, they've already admitted it, that they don't have enough money to sack Allardyce. Everyone's banging on about Allardyce is this, Allardyce is that. I agree with everything that they said about Allardyce in the negative side, because it's true. He's got no tactics, and you've heard it all before. I'm not going to bore you with all of that. But, as I was saying, we can't afford to sack the manager, so we're actually stuck. End of the day, Golden Sullivan need to put their hands in their pocket, get a loan or whatever it is that they need to do to come up with enough money to get rid of Allardyce, because he's just doing nothing for our team in terms of tactics or anything. He's one-track minded. It's like he's only got a plan A, which we can't even have, because Andy Carroll was out injured for so long. He's come back now. But that is our basic tactic. Everyone knows what we're going to do. We bought Jarvis for £10 million, I think it was. That's just extortion. I don't know why the board allowed that to happen. And they spent nearly 20 on Andy Carroll. That's 30 million on two players. They're average players. Andy Carroll at his best is good. Don't get me wrong, and he'll be good to complement a team like Newcastle, for instance, who are going places, got good players all over the pitch. They could have, you know, I don't know if they could afford just to spend that much on one player, but you can understand it there, because they don't need a whole heap of other players. Hence, while we've had to play left backs in centre back positions, they haven't spread the cost of all of that money that they've laid out. The owners have to be accountable for that, because they've allowed that to happen. They own the business. Are you guys still there?
We're listening away. We're letting you go. We like your points. Raphael, thanks for your call. You made some good points there. You know, the thing is, I mean, all right, you can look at this two ways. I'm not quite sure which way I look at it at the moment. You've got Sam Allardyce there saying, never known injuries like it, can't legislate for it. I'm worried about getting out of bed in case I trip up and end up in the hospital myself. The flip side of me thinks, but if you've got 30 million to spend on players, you have to have a squad deep enough to legislate for as many eventualities as you can. Has he been a little bit naive in the recruitment process here?
Yeah.
And left himself a little bit bare?
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, I've had this one on Twitter as well, Robbie. It's from Cinderella Man. And he said that he's on a train full of Cardiff fans and Gary Medel. So all the Cardiff lads are on this train, and Gary Medel is on it as well. So if you've ever been on a train somewhere coming back from a game and you've had a player on there as well, let us know. 85058 on text if you can do that. If you've ever been coming back from a match, you've sat there on the train and all of a sudden look across